Why do so many dogs die before their time? Actress and dog activist Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete by Badlands Ranch is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including premium protein-packed beef, nutrient-dense organ meat, heart-healthy salmon, gut-healthy vegetables, and several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And because high-heat cooking can add unhealthy things to your dog's food, Superfood Complete uses air drying, so it gets cooked low and slow. This means it has the convenience of kibble, but the health benefits of whole foods. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible benefits, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 right now to get up to 50% off your order and a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's badlandsranch.com/save50 today. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary.
Save big on all your Halloween needs, all in the Kroger app. Get juicy red, green, or black seedless grapes for 99 cents a pound. Then get tender USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Do you find yourself captivated by the inexplicable, entranced by enigmas, and tantalized by the unknown? We are Shane and Josh Waters, brothers who will weave you through tales that have mystified us for years. From haunted hotels to inexplicable disappearances, with a gripping narrative, we invite you to join us on a journey into realms of the unexplained. So, armchair detectives, curious minds, and seekers of the strange, it's time to put on your headphones and dim the lights.
Dive into the uncanny world of the Mystery Inc. podcast and prepare for a journey into the unknown that you'll never forget. And remember, some mysteries are better left unsolved, but not unexplored.
Ah, greetings once again, my ghoulish gang. It's time for this Spooktober's fearful finale as we plunge into the murky waters of a most macabre mystery. Our tale centers on the grim and grisly discovery of a young woman's body found lifeless in a clawfoot tub. Her demise as mysterious as the cryptic clues dripping at the scene. Who was she? How did she meet her watery end? And who could concoct such a sinister soaking? This case file, join the fearless as we unravel a tale of twisted motives and slippery suspects. We'll scrub away the scum of time to reveal the dark stains of a story soaked in suspicion and suspense. Join us for The Three Sisters in Black.
Oh, welcome to Alien Theories Theorizing Case File
337.
Woo!
Got it. The Three Sisters in Black.
I'm Braden.
I'm Zell.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Andrew.
For the final installment of Spooktober
2024. Thank God, dude. Honestly, I don't know what it is about Spooktober.
And you're just cursed, buddy.
Every Spooktober, I have. Last year, Spooktober, my computer wrecked. This year, October, my computer's about to wreck. I've had fucking my black cat
pissing in your computer. That's
what's
happening.
He's pissing in my computer room, breaking Two legs. He's wearing a little purple cast with a ghost on it, though, right now. You know what I never told you guys? Before
you
start,
decided to stop using a toilet and you just shit in a giant kiddie pool with sand.
See this? I sit here and I arch it back
into
the
fully transitioned
into
a cat.
Kiddie pool. Right.
Do you
litter
identify
box.
As a cat now?
Mm-hmm.
Have you been the cat with a broken leg this entire time?
My cat pronouns are Mr. Meow.
Mr. Meow.
Meow, what's so damn funny? It's just a matter of time before that whole room is just like lined with plastic and the whole thing is sand.
See him with his little boot cast there?
Yeah.
Oh, I feel bad for him. Poor guy.
He's
actually he's a Halloween kitty too.
That's what's going on here. He's just walking back and forth in front behind you. It's cursing you left and right.
He's got a little ghost on his. You want out of there? He's not happy with me. Because I have to give him all the medication, so he holds a grudge. You know what I never told you guys about? I never ran you through my weird experience I had.
Spooky one?
No, I saw some weird lights. Before we start, do we got time? Should I do it now?
Is this when you saw a plane?
I feel like you told
maybe
this already.
Maybe.
I mean, I don't know if you told it on the show.
So I came. So if you want the, I did everything I think you should when you see weird lights in the sky, and I posted it all on Discord. It's in the UFO channel. I think I have pictures, everything. So what happened was, and I want your guys' opinion. Driving up to a four-way stop, cranking music, and before I'm driving, I was at Pizza Hut or Domino's or something. I can't remember.
You were getting crazy sticks.
I was getting crazy sticks.
Yeah, you told us this.
Yeah, I know. I told you separate off the show.
Oh,
I
my
like,
bad.
I don't think I told Dan or anyone. So then I'm sitting there, I'm waiting for the crazy sticks, and I see on my phone that there's a police event going on, and they have the like whole downtown core kind of cordoned off and no one knows what's kind of going on. And I say that just because it puts the, like, I know now there's something going on with the RCMP and it's a big incident. So I'm driving home, I come up to this four-way stop, and as I pull up to the stop, I see this light like over top of the subdivision, just over to my right, and it's red and blue. And so I'm just looking at it, and my brain just goes, oh, RCMP helicopter. Just, I don't know why. I think just because I thought with the RCMP event.
Colored lights in the sky? Plane.
Yeah. And so I'm like, or a helicopter. I was like, I don't know. Just, but it wasn't moving. It was just perfectly. So I thought it was a helicopter. So then all of a sudden, a third light comes on in between the two and it's white. And I'm kind of looking and I'm like, oh, okay. And right after it goes white, the red and blue flip like instantly. The white stays and goes red and blue, except then it was red and green. So then I went, oh, that must be a drone. Like, cause, and it just did a quick turn. That's what I was thinking in my head, that it's one of those quadricopter drones and it did a quick spin. And so now I'm seeing, you know, red, white, green. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of weird. And I was just about to pull away and it was just weird enough that I went, you know what? I know we talk about this shit all the time. I'm just going to get out and confirm it's like a helicopter or something. Cause then I'll be able to hear. Right. So I just put my car in park, get out, and there's nothing. It's completely silent, just absolutely silent. So I'm kind of looking at this thing and I'm just going, what the fuck? And it's not moving. And it's like, it's kind of lower in the sky. Like, so now I'm like, is it a drone? But there's no like drone, like, bzz, like whirling or anything. So I was kind of just watching this. I'm standing out of my car now, just kind of dumbfounded. And all of a sudden, this thing just kind of like takes a little tilt forward and just starts moving. And the second it starts moving, it honestly sounded like a trolling motor, like, bah, 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 bah. And I was like, and we have float planes all in the area. I was like, is that a float plane? And it came kind of right, just almost over top of me to my right. And as it passed over top of me, three lights, boom, on the front, in the middle, and in the back. Three white lights turned on. Boom, boom, boom. And then it just kept drifting. It was like, pop, 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 pop. And it just kind of banked left and then around the trees and I could no longer see it. And I was like, what the fuck was that? So I went home. I called Zell immediately.
You called me? I thought you seen fucking Bigfoot or something. Yeah.
I called him instantly. Cool. Instantly. Way cool. I was just like,
I just hit Bigfoot on the highway. He's dead right here, man. You'll never believe it.
So
that's why I was
putting him in my freezer.
I went... I went home. I did the flight tracker. I did the 2 week before they charge you $40 so I could actually rewind the flight. And I was like, oh, what the fuck just happened?
Nice.
You went black.
Nice. Click my something. Whole screen. Can you guys still hear me?
We yep. still hear you.
I hear you.
Oh, nice. Well, I can, yeah, I don't know what's going on, but
that's
I can.
Your camera.
Spooktober.
My whole screen's black.
This is fucking ridiculous. You fucking
screen. Oh my God.
Piece of shit.
So I did the whole flight tracker thing and there was nothing in the sky. Like it was so fucking weird. It was just strange. There's nothing in the sky. There was no helicopters in that area. There's only two flights, like, but they were way up in the sky. And I just have no idea what it would have been.
Couldn't have been like an RCMP drone?
Maybe, but what made the drone doesn't make that fucking kind of noise. It was totally silent at first.
Yeah, I don't know.
Right?
So it would fit with a car white lights. At three sets of white lights like on the bottom, like three yes. columns. Three rows of pens.
I don't know. I don't know. The fact that you did hear a sound though makes me think it was a craft of some weird, weird craft. Maybe like some weird... fucking little blimp or something.
Yeah, it was just super strange.
That tracks. I get that with the police presence, just like, you know, the Gotham City PD, they always use blimps. Mm-hmm. Maybe the RCMP have started using blimps.
We're you know, we're 2024, we're bringing back blimps.
We're bringing them back. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're more fuel efficient.
Doesn't well, sound not the, this one. It sounds like it's on a fucking two-stroke motor. It's
yeah, but the other thing is the RCMP shit going on was not it was just oh my God.
That's what they want you to think.
Ooh, you're, hey, back. You're back.
Are you guys getting that noise now though?
Nope.
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 Okay. Dude, your computer got pissed on for sure.
I don't know what's going on here. But I'm getting some weird, it's so loud. Anyways, that was my UFO story where, well, just weird lights in the sky. I have no idea what it is. I tried to do all my due diligence to prove it was nothing.
Well, why don't you upload the video footage or pictures and or pictures that you took of it?
Yeah, to MUFON.
Yeah, well, let's see, my phone let's see was got. Plugged in and I was listening to music. It was in the passenger seat. And honestly, I thought it was nothing. So when I got out of the car, I didn't even think to grab it.
So
and then
you
it was
did
so
all
weird.
Your due diligence but that.
Except
but
like the most having a perfect frame video yeah. of the
I don't know. Okay. You don't think device. About that at the time.
Well, but you're an expert. Like anybody's going to be calm in these situations. It's going to be a UFO expert.
That's true.
Self-proclaimed. Yeah.
And I thought I was going to be calm, and I wasn't.
Okay, so I do question your credibility as an expert.
Yeah.
That's cool, though. You seen something.
Yeah, that's really weird.
So, guys, let's wrap this Spooktober up, because right, I need I gotta
it.
Get out
that's
of this
That's it for us
luck.
Tonight. We'll see you next week.
Is it that bad?
Okay.
No, it was end of Spooktober. We had to do a little true crime to Dan's delight.
Spooky crime.
Spooky time.
Three witches, perhaps.
Witch crime?
Dark.
Definitely.
Witch crime.
Dark magic.
There's a whole new podcast genre. It's just witch crime.
Just witch crime?
Yes, witch crime.
Fuck true crime.
Witch
crime.
The financial only. Sector.
Occult crime? Like.
All of the above.
I think is that. Yeah.
Talking occult crime in a spooky time.
Yeah.
That'd be the oh, that's a great tagline for that show right there.
Yeah, that is. That's our show.
That's
occult
it.
Occult crime. That's it.
Occult crime?
Occult crime?
Yeah.
Searching.
I like it.
Cult crime.
Occult crime.
Occult crime. Podcasts and shows.
Occult crime.
There's a backward show. Okay. It says crimes occultus.
Crime occultus.
Occultes. I think it has an accent on it. Occultes.
Sounds good. Occultes.
Anyways.
Interesting. Yeah, this one starts right around the turn of the century there on the night of November 29th, 1909. On the 89 North 14th Street of East Orange, New Jersey. Young doctor, Herbert M. Sibbons, was dispatched as there was no coroner to receive a call from that domicile reporting a dead body was found, and they needed somebody out to come out and, you know, take account of the of this death. So
I pronounce the death and do all that fun
Do stuff, all the paperwork, right? You know.
Yeah. Great job.
Is that what coroners do? Is it important? Isn't it, like, I didn't realize, like, do you need kind of specialized training? Like,
depends on which state. In the U.S., it depends on the state, actually. Like, the coroner can be, like, almost... There's some states where it's, like, it doesn't really take any... you don't need any medical... qualification.
Here, you don't, like, you don't need them to retrieve them, but, like, they legally, like, here, the either, like, medical personnel, RCMP, or the coroner have to be in the presence of the body. Like, you can't just... send somebody, like, we can't get all the corner, so we called the fucking, you know, the taxi to come scoop her up.
Hey, that black cat of yours has opened the door somehow. That was insane.
No, that was black that magic. Was Jamie.
No, it wasn't. I didn't see anyone else.
No,
it
was black
it
magic.
Was just the fucking cat.
It was, he goes by Salem as well. He just,
yeah.
He's got some skills.
So Dr. Simmons arrives at this house, you know, and knocks on the door. And when the door opens, before him, he finds a tall, spare woman described dressed all in black, like all in black, long cape, like the full on.
Huge nose, huge bulbous nose.
I believe. Old fucking wart on it, too.
Yeah. You got the long, heavy veils that you can barely see the face, actually.
It's like she's already ready for the fucking funeral.
And so, but the physician actually finds it quite pleasing that this woman seems to have a very pronounced southern accent, and back then around the turn of the century, it was like that was kind of seen as a bit of like a high class kind of feature. So he was like, okay, this person's a bit a person of culture, so she's probably not a witch,
a murderer.
The
a
south murderer. Okay, isn't wouldn't these people be on opposite sides of the war that wasn't that long ago?
Yes. I think Reconstruction was like underway or almost finished.
But they're like, we like the accent. Really,
that's a nice accent though. But yeah. I think he killed my grandpa.
She introduced herself as Virginia Wardlaw.
Wardlaw, that's a good southern name. Like, it's
Wardlaw.
Wardlaw.
But at odds with her accent, as he finds when she brings him into the house, he finds, you know, what he expected probably to be, but a bit more, you know, maybe some a bit of furnishing or something like that. He finds the entire apartment just this complete squalid, unheated, unfurnished home.
Just a box.
Cold and empty, right? Like, he literally says it's like, it doesn't look like anybody's lived here in years.
That's so odd.
And Miss Wardlaw went ahead and ushered him towards the bathroom, where he found the nude, emaciated body of a young girl who seemingly drowned in the bathtub. He was also shown, apparently, her clothes were down next to the bathtub with a suicide note apparently pinned to them.
Easy. Fucking case closed.
No better way to do it than drown yourself in a bathtub.
Yeah.
Everybody knows it's super easy to drown yourself.
Yeah. You're not going to fight it at all. You're just going to sit there and.
The note read.
You guys used to do that when you were kids. Like, remember that? Was it Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2? Raphael was in the bathtub, like, up to his nose while he was recovering? Or is that the first one?
That's. Raphael gets beat up in the first one.
Right? And remember, he's in the bathtub and he's just barely. He's just his nose out of the water?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you try and then you just suck down a whole snout full of nose.
I used to do that all the time.
No, it's the second one. Secondly,
I thought
second one when he goes with fucking Tino,
to
fight the Foot Clan. Yeah, Secret of Ooze. But the first one is the one where he's in the bathtub, not the second one.
Is it?
It's not. Is it? It's Leo's in the bathtub on the first one.
Is it Leo? Oh, see, maybe I'm just.
See, Leo gets hurt in the first one.
Yeah, no, you're
and then
right,
Raph
you're
gets
right.
hurt in the second one.
100%.
It's been too long. Gotten due for too long a rewatch.
So Dr. Simmons picked up the note and it read as such. Last year, my little daughter died. Other near and dear ones have gone before. I have been prostrated with illness for a long time. When you read this, I will have committed suicide. Do not grieve over me. Rejoice with me that death brings a blessed relief from pain and suffering greater than I can bear. So Dr. Simmons, you know, turned to Miss Virginia Wardlaw, you know, what is your relation to this girl who's in this tub? And Miss Wardlaw says, she is my niece, O.C. Sneed.
Sneed.
That name is straight out of Harry Potter.
O.C. Yeah, Sneed, yeah. Right? Like, hold on. Like, the first name, it's like initials? Your first name are initials, O.C.?
No, her full name was Oceana, I'm pretty sure.
Right. Was, oh, which was a kind of a common O.C. name O.C. back okay. then. Not anymore, but yeah. And O.C. was her nickname, a shortened version of Oceana, which she had been known as. So that was her relation. So just looking at it in the entire situation, Dr. Simmons already had some misgivings about what seemed to have happened here. It doesn't seem everything was fitting quite right.
Suspicious. A little bit. You got fucking witch lady come answer the door to this somewhat like vacant home. The only thing that they find in there is like a naked emaciated girl in the bathtub and like a suicide note.
Like, yeah. It doesn't. It was like, they're like, where's the linen closet? Is there towels here?
Not because there isn't food, because this person weighs 80 pounds.
Yeah, she like like emaciated, like she was like a skeleton. She looked like a ghoul, I would imagine.
It was about 6 p.m. and within the hour that the original phone call had been made to the Main Street station, when Sergeant William H. O'Neill knocked on the door of number 89 as well. He was ushered into the house by Virginia, and he kind of marked out a more detailed look at what was, you know, the appearance of the house, where there was like the floors were completely bare. In the downstairs hall, there was a chair missing its front legs and was just propped up on a soapbox. There were...
This place is literally just fucking missing a Cadillac on cinder blocks out front, like one of those shitty bench presses.
The parlor was completely bare, save for a corner that apparently was holding a solitary umbrella.
Dude, probably a box of like Armor All baking soda, like, and that's it. That's in the pantry. I can see that. Like, half opened.
There was like these. There was just one chair that had apparently been fashioned by just nailing a willow chair back to a dry goods box. So it wasn't even a chair. It was just a box with like they'd taken a chair back and just nailed it on there.
Dude, this is a bachelor pad. Seems like, this is what this is. This sounds like a bachelor pad.
A fucking mattress with a TV on the floor.
That's it. Yeah.
Apparently, the kitchen itself, he marked it as, described it as very gloomy and dirty and unkempt, where there were just morsels of food just seemingly strewn about the thing or hadn't been cleaned in a while. And then in the cellar, there was a heater of what he described as ancient vintage and was out of repair, and not even an ash or coal was remaining within the heater itself, which is
so the, like it hasn't been used in how long? And this is fucking November,
right?
Right, like it's cold.
It's cold.
Mm-hmm. So of course, you know, being the inquisitive sergeant that he was, William starts asking a whole bunch of questions to Virginia Wardlaw. Who was O.C. Sneed? You know, what was her maiden name? Where was she born? You know, and asking all of these questions and getting into these details, Virginia Wardlaw was not very forthcoming with a lot of the answers.
No, no shit, dude. I've watched every fucking. Well, she's about to be prime suspect.
She either was a lawyer. She wasn't. She just gave him like either the most basic answers or just refused to answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I would too. You never talk to the ops, baby. You never talk to the cops. You get a lawyer up.
I think she. He basically got out of her like.
How many times are these fucking dummies get on the right track, and then they make the evidence paint the picture they want to paint, right? Got protected.
I mean, it all depends. If this is in the first 48, right?
You know, along with all these questions, eventually, like William kind of gets the, you know, gets out of her the information that, you know, why, how did you not know that she was there? Like, when did you find the body? She's like, well, I've been, you know, they figured she had been there at least 24 hours in that tub is what the doctor kind of estimated. You know, the sergeant's like, how did you not know that she was there? And Virginia kind of said, well, you know, she asked me earlier to not be disturbed, and you know, I had.
Yeah, she's having a bath.
She was going to have a bath
all the time. Having a bath, leave me alone.
And she was going to take a warm bath, which would have required them to have, you know, gotten the heater, warm water, which would have required a heater. But of course, there were no ashes in there. So, story's looking a little bit.
Nah, she's big into cold plunging, is what I heard.
She started it.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, gets in there a little too cold. Ooh, shock. Pass out, so drown.
With, you know, understandably, with Virginia's reticence and, you know, her refusal to answer a lot of these questions and some of the stuff not lining up, Sergeant Williams like, yeah, we're going downtown.
Yeah, I mean, downtown. And she
her, Dano.
From accounts, like, she was almost taken back. Like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
Well, it's an empty house with a dead body. There's no furniture. There's no nothing. And you're here.
So and your story isn't adding up. And you're not answering any
questions. But I'm a southern lady.
Yeah.
I do declare.
Yeah. Do you know this cop
was smart. He what do you got to do with the Ruguru? You got to give it coins or something? Got to make it count.
Make him count.
Make him count.
Yeah,
the Ruguru wasn't getting this cop.
So Sergeant O'Neill and the doctor, probably, and a lot of people wouldn't realize exactly what they were getting into at this point, because the story would unfold after the next couple days of what exactly
it's fucking crazy,
very saga of this entire thing, because it wasn't just a suicide.
There wasn't just one witch.
No, there wasn't. So I guess the like, when did they get the other ones too? Because I know they took Virginia downtown, and then when did
we'll
they
get into
the
that?
Other two?
Yeah, that
start painting in the background. So, you paint this beautiful background for us, Dan. Grab a little paintbrush and just paint it, and we'll get there.
Sure. So, yeah, before we get into introduce the other two ladies in black here, the first one, Virginia specifically, it was in 1892 where a prominent national banker named Samuel J. Keith had asked Virginia Virginia Wadlow to accept presidency of Murfreesboro Soul Female College, whose board he had actually served.
Now, Virginia, would you please?
I've never seen Murphy spelled with a F-R-E-E.
That's
why it looks so weird.
Oh, I didn't even think that. Imagine that was your name. Like, that's how
I look at that and I'm like, what the fuck?
Murfreesboro. Murphy. Yeah, I've seen it spelled like that in towns, like at Murfreesboro.
Is that?
Yeah, I've seen it like that.
Never. It's blowing my mind.
I'm going to name it. I want to name my next kid Murphy, and that's how I'll spell it.
So Murfreesboro Soul Female College is actually a very prominent educational institution, and it was probably one of the finest educational facilities in the South. Like, it was recognized as such. And Virginia Wadlow being tapped to go ahead and, you know, be the president, the next president of it. She was understandably excited. Like, she was an lifetime educator. Like, she had been sent to schools. I think she was it Wellesley? She was well educated, and she was also kind of on the cutting edge of education at the time.
Was she well educated, or was it just the accent where they're like, oh shit.
Yeah. She just sounds smart.
She sounds so smart.
Yeah, I like that.
So after she took the position, she was also kind of seemed obliged to bring in Mary Sneed, who was her sister, in 1896.
A little nepotism going on here.
Right. So Mary Sneed came to the town, moved to the town with her three sons, Fletcher, John, and Albert. And Mary also taught at the college, and she was well-liked, as was Virginia. Like, Virginia was she was already being recognized for her efforts in updating the curriculum, you know, getting everything kind of put into place. Like, it was thriving. The school seemed to be thriving
sister
under
act.
Her leadership.
Like, they're tag-teaming this place. And they're killing it.
At this time, too, I mean, they would already be, I would kind of guess, like, almost rebels, almost in the sense, because, like, I don't know how well in, you know, the early, late 1800s, my memory doesn't serve me very well, but, like, I don't think learned ladies were very popular.
Well, this is a school for learned ladies.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying, like, at all, learned ladies weren't very popular. So the ones running the school, I don't think they were, like, they were kind of on cutting edge of...
I mean,
they're out getting educations, doing jobs. It's not like they're out of the norm of what society at this time is kind of pushing.
But at the same time, too, it's like learned ladies. But one of the things that they're teaching here is like class and how to be a culture lady and shit, right? Yeah. Like it's like they say that, like it's a lady not school. Like, they're not doing like lady science.
Yeah,
they're
also
they're like this is the servant. This is the servant forward.
Yeah, but they were teaching them dessert. To more.
You got it wrong.
Like they weren't just teaching them like knife and fork stuff, which they probably were. They're probably knife and fork school.
Curtsies.
Yeah, they were probably teaching them that, but along with those, they were also teaching them skills, I think, like typing,
like and like
note taking, those kinds of things. Because I think the sister, note taking, like being like out of, like how secretaries have shorthand. Like you learn shorthand. Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I know shorthand. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like
stenographers used to do that.
Yeah. It's almost like a completely different, different language. Like, them learning it. But they were learning skills like that. Yeah.
Nowadays, for sure.
Yeah. Nobody uses it.
Yeah. I don't think I remember how to write cursive. It's been 20 years.
Yeah.
I'd be.
I've seen your signature and it would appear to me as if you're just learning cursive.
My signature says, has no letters in it. Zero. It just scribbles. Yeah. It's a coordinated scribble that looks kind of the same each time.
Mine's no better.
And so even back then, the sisters were known to dress entirely in black, which was kind of just like their family garb at the time, which they were considered eccentric, but they were also just kind of very well respected and they were also seemed well educated. So everybody pretty much really thought of them very highly within the town and within the school itself.
I mean, like back then you had like, what, three colors anyways? Black, white, brown, gray.
Gray, but back then, you know, the black, it's like, it wasn't something that they wore. It wasn't completely, you know, associated with the occult as it was, you know, kind of back then. It was a little bit back then. I guess spiritualism hadn't really taken a hold, which would be like another couple of years before that. I guess, no, it was still kind of.
So they were goth girls is what you're saying.
Mm, yeah. Yeah.
OG goth.
Yeah. but everything was going along pretty smoothly within the school itself. And for pretty much like almost the decade, like the school turned out to be very profitable, attracting a lot of new students, you know, was able to refurbish a lot of its rooms and like open up other extra facilities along the way. And then in 1901, the eldest sister of the sisters showed up. And so that was, what was her name?
Caroline. So the oldest sister comes with her daughter in tow. And I think we got to get into a little bit of the history of these two because they're quite prominent in this story. So Caroline had a career in education already. At one point, she actually had to be removed from her position as head lady for unstable behavior, which is, you know,
interesting.
It's going to be a common occurrence here, unfortunately. Now, Usi or Oceana, the daughter, the one that we've heard about, emaciated in the bathtub, she was the daughter of Confederate war hero Colonel Robert Maxwell Martin, who attempted to kidnap the vice president, Andrew Johnson, and burn down the city of New York.
So war hero, just depending on which side of the war you're on.
Confederate war hero. Yeah,
of course.
Mm. Right? So following the war, UC's father made it rich in the tobacco industry. He then later met Caroline. They settled down and they decided to build this large, elaborate mansion because, of course, he's balling with that tobacco money. And this is where kind of the family's misfortunes start taking place. This mansion, just newly completed, burns to the ground in extremely suspicious circumstances, right? Not long after that, the family relocates to New York, where they give birth to Oceana. In the early 1900s, they have a second child who dies from encephalitis secondary to falling down a set of stairs. Again, extremely, extremely suspicious circumstances, especially when you consider the fact that the family was struggling financially. And right after the kid died, they cashed in a $22,000 life insurance policy.
On their kid.
Then, not long after that, Robert ends up having this massive paralytic stroke And apparently Caroline...
What does paralytic mean of the stroke? What's that?
Paralyzing. Can't move. Oh, okay. It's paralyzed. Following the stroke, you know, obviously Caroline, she's a learned woman, but she's not a doctor. She's not a nurse. Of course she's going to get people to come in and help her husband and, you know, get him some healthcare around the clock. No, refuse to let anyone see him. And then, of course, he dies soon later. This is when they decide to pack up and go work with, you know, Caroline's sisters in Tennessee.
just a few suspicious events on top of each other.
Yeah, some coincidences.
Series of misfortunate events, you know?
So Caroline shows up with OC in tow, and OC is apparently, like, she flourishes in the college, like, herself, like, you know, academically, socially.
Yeah, well, really she's, likes her. She's, listen, who's going to give her bad grades? She's a president's niece.
Not, yeah, that's a good point.
Right?
Yeah. Well, she was, you know, but I mean, most of the people are like, no, she was a very good kid. Like, everybody kind of liked her, and she was very outgoing, and kind of everybody just had a really good impression of OC. On the other hand, Caroline, while she was, at first, she was, like, well-respected, and a lot of people kind of found her entertaining, but and kind of quite persuasive at times, but there were other occasions people noted that had her kind of, like, no, this, she's got steel. Like, she's got iron on her fucking... And,
she's a bitch.
Like, are we talking like trench bowl?
Oh, yeah. I'm getting trench bowl vibes.
And so kind of slowly at first, conditions at the college, like, started to shift. Apparently all of the business transactions started to be gradually taken over by Caroline. So any money that came into the college went through her hands first. And this kind of, apparently she left the impression with, people that they pretty much had an unlimited supply of money. But you still had the, you know, within a couple of years, like, you had bills that were being incurred by the college that became months behind in payment.
She was just spending out of control. Like, it was, yeah. She had unlimited money. So how she was dealing with this.
Everything in black, just fucking all black, everything.
Well, you know, listen, if you're buying yourself numerous dresses, they're all black. It's hard for people to tell that you're balling out on dresses.
Yeah. Right? And they all look the same. So, and there was, like, some other strange things that were happening that apparently, like, people, like, random rooms within the college itself ended up being padlocked and locked off for
multiple padlocks. And, like, nah. Okay, listen, it's kind of fucking weird. It's not that weird. You want to know what's weird? Sneaking into your students' rooms at night and staring at them while they sleep.
That's part of the story. Ooh. That I
which
also
all
heard.
All three of these fucking women. We're doing.
Would just the students would wake up and they're just standing there in their fucking outfit,
yep. Just and all black,
hovering over the students.
So what? Yep. They just, what's the interaction like? They just kind of, they're like, just nod and leave the room after. Like, how does that? You just sit there in silence, staring at each other.
There was a lot of. I think there at a couple times.
You just
that
go back to.
Happen.
Are you expected to go back to sleep while she's in the room?
Yeah,
you
this just is you trench bowl. Yeah, you're terrified.
You just don't move. They can't see them if you don't move.
No, like T-Rex.
Yeah, 100%.
And like shit, like they would they would leave like early in the evening and not come back until early in the morning.
Yeah.
Like just gone.
And then
listen, the multiple padlocks on doors definitely raises suspicion for me, because I like, one's fine. And the second you're starting to add more, you're like, okay, now what's in there? Yeah, what's going on here?
What do you want to not get out? What are you trying to keep in there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, with multiple, like that.
I never thought about getting
keeping
out. I was thinking
in.
Like, yeah. Oh.
I think
you can't risk. Anyway, like, I think it's not like they had smart keys back then. She's got different keys for each one of these locks.
Just carrying around mitt full of keys.
Skeleton keys, for sure.
Have to be.
I think discipline started to take a nosedive within the school itself, like started stuff become unruly. A lot of the girls and things that kind of just gradually breaking down. A lot of them were describing these weird events where they would wake up and they would find the women either like in standing over them, kind of watching them, or they would find them like, I think one reported like seeing them like crouching near one of the heaters or near one of the furnaces or something. And they were all seemed to like be chanting something or whispering something under their breath. And then, you know, but, you know, when confronted with these accusations, like the sisters would kind of answer, like kind of brush it off and be like, well, we heard something, like we heard a noise and we had to go into that room and be there and look for what was making this noise. We thought somebody was hurt or, you know, so it was kind of like, oh, you know, well, okay. Like, you know.
Can you imagine these poor girls like writing back to their families like, dear papa, this Eve, you know, like what the fuck?
Yet another what room am I paying in, the, for? In the school is locked with six locks. Yeah, and Caroline was in my room yet again this morning.
And people were following that, you know, with the arrival of Caroline, like things had now started to take a downturn at the college. And so a lot of people kind of started raising, you know, valid questions like why didn't Virginia, who was the president of the college, like why was she not contradicting her sister? Why was she not stopping her from doing the things that apparently she seemed to be doing, or that she was in charge of and seemed to be kind of making all of the choices for between the three sisters? Ooh,
puppet,
and everything
puppet
that happened
presidency
at the college.
Going on there.
There were rumors kind of floating around that maybe Caroline knew some kind of dark secret that about Virginia and like had some information about her that didn't want to get out, or, you know, some people started kind of noticing that there seemed to be a remarkable similarity between OC and her Aunt Virginia, which would, to me is like, well, yeah, they're niece and aunt, like, yeah, the same family. Like, duh.
Yeah, but the big thing about Virginia, though,
I guess
she
it
was
doesn't
like,
matter. Yeah.
She was big on being like the spinster, right? Like the fucking female educator, no husband, no kids, no nothing, right? So I think they thought maybe that Usi could be her kid and that would kind of contradict this image that she's trying to uphold.
Mm-hmm. And I could see, said, I could right. see that
they share half the DNA. So.
And it's like back then too, like, you know, this, again, they're not teaching lady science there. Right. So maybe there's just like they're all just like, well, she looks more like her. You know what that means?
Both of them have black hair.
Yeah.
So news starts to spread fast about these kind of weird things going on at the college. And then I think, Andrew, did you want to expand on that, or you had something between then?
That was kind of, that was the weird shit that I was going to elaborate on. Shit. It was just like, you know, there's a little bit more I kind of want to save until after, because these late night antics get pretty fucking weird.
Yeah.
It's like fucked up at the school. Like some weird shit is coming. Well, they just, you're getting locks.
But people, Dan's going to go into it. Like they go from this once prosperous female, like school of female education and something to be proud of. And, you know, and then it just plummets. And it's
just
like
implodes.
Not even that long of a time frame. And
Students are leaving in droves, you know, as the discipline kind of broken down within the school and almost seems to collapse completely. Like the money matters were in a state of complete chaos. Like nobody knew, you know, stuff wasn't getting repaired that needed to get repaired. Like the school is falling into disrepair and like a lot of the facilities were not getting fixed or nothing. Things was getting refurbished like it was in the beginning. There was just like, everything was just falling apart. So eventually,
You know what the vibe I get from this situation? Like you talk like, oh, maybe Caroline had something on Virginia and Mary. It was Mary, right? The other sister. Mm-hmm. The thing that comes to me, and I'm riding the fucking witch train here, right? Like it's fucking witches. Makes me feel like Caroline's like the head witch of the coven. Here, you know, like she's the one calling
but
the
she
shot.
Is the eldest sister, like
right, like that's because like literally everything goes to shit when she shows up. Mm-hmm. It's like these women who are great teachers all of a sudden turn into fucking
they have to fall like, in line
witches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The weird thing is, it's like, yeah, it's not till really the third sister gets there, and then it all just comes tumbling down.
Yeah. So finally, the committee of trustees takes charge, and they end up ousting all three of the sisters. They get them out, and then the sisters kind of apparently, you know, in shame, left in the dead of night, reportedly buying tickets on while aboard a southbound train. So people are trying to figure out like where they were going. They couldn't because the sisters didn't buy the tickets at the train station. They actually bought them while they were on the train, so nobody even knew where they went.
And like, smart. I mean, they're probably, people are probably wanting to look at them and ask questions about like missing funds, I imagine. And so, there's probably some other stuff attached to that of them just like leaving in shame. Like, it does sound like, I was like, something shady and nefarious was going on. So maybe it's one of those things where you're running from any kind of accountability as well.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there were still questions going around because apparently like they were storing furniture and items like in different people's houses or places, like they're finding places to store things, and like where they were living was like not exactly clear, like where they had been living. There were still some rumors about them going down to a cemetery and like having these small like three sister gatherings,
seances in the cemetery. At night.
They hired a driver literally to come pick them up and take them to the cemetery every night. Mm-hmm. So they can chant and dance and like,
what are they doing there? I wonder.
And you want these bitches teaching your kids?
Yeah.
So in 1904, a little while after, Virginia Wardlaw would resurface in Christiansburg, Virginia, where she was invited, by, I believe it was like her aunt, like her great aunt.
Yeah. Her name was like Oceana Poska or some shit like that.
Right. Who apparently had, you know, had a position for her to run Montgomery Female College, which was a well-respected boarding school for young women.
You've got the experience, right? No past issues.
yeah, she's family, right? Like, they're family back then. So... Again, Virginia would arrive, and also Mary would come soon after, and apparently Soul College, you know, thrived under them. Once again, they achieved wide-ranging recognition. They introduced courses that hadn't been there before, things like dressmaking, typewriting, bookkeeping, commercial law, Latin, Greek, constitutional history, English literature, French, German language, European history, ethics, aesthetics, all math, physiology, geology, civil government, and political economy, which is also could be considered black magic, I suppose.
Just a quick side of black magic. No big deal.
Yeah.
Can be used for good in the right hands.
And, you know, this was like, they were pushing a very, you know, this is a progressive curriculum for this. And, you know, everybody, again, it seemed to take the same pattern where the two sisters are like together. The school was doing well. Like, it was in an upward trend. Then Caroline arrives, and she again takes over a large percentage of the college's administrative duties. And then again, but people start noting that Caroline is not exactly in the same probably caliber as her other sisters.
It's kind of strange because it seems like they come in, one comes in, kind of like warms everyone up. Second one comes in, they start to absolutely kill it to the point where then they can, like, I wonder if it's one of those things where it's to build trust very quickly early on from the people involved. So that way when Caroline gets there, it takes longer to...
And they can sneak into kids' bedrooms.
Yeah, it takes longer to kind of for people to question because things have become so good that, you know, maybe they wouldn't put up with that if... You know, right away things went bad, but it's like this, things were so good, new heights being achieved. And then suddenly, you know, it's this long plummet and you're like, oh, that's kind of, it's like so strange. I wonder if you just sit back and like not question things as fast. Part of me was wondering if that was
crazy because the exact same shit started happening.
Yeah.
Like exact. Mm-hmm. They started doing the exact same shit.
The padlock doors makes a return. The curriculum suddenly changes. And then there's like a shifting of students from different classes for apparently random reasons.
In the middle of class too.
It does.
Right.
Come with me.
Like in the middle of the day. Yeah.
And once again, you know, with Caroline in charge of the college's finances, those also start to take a...
It's crazy. It just seems like... It seems like so similar that it's like, it's just premeditated. All right, you two You two
like
get
it's a
there.
Plan.
You set it all up. And as we said before, like maybe swipe a blackmail from the older sister on the other two or something weird. Something super weird goes on because the exact, it's just a mirror image.
You want to talk about fucking weird? You want to get weird?
I do want to get weird. Let's get fucking weird right after the beer break. We're going to be right back.
Spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. The busy holiday season is here, and Uncommon Goods makes it less stressful with incredible hand-picked gifts for everyone that's on your list, all in one spot. Gifts that spark joy, wonder, delight, and that it's exactly what I wanted kind of feeling. They scour the globe for original handmade, absolutely remarkable things. Somehow they know exactly the perfect gift for every single person you know. Here's a few of my favorite gifts that I found on their site, like Smokey the Bear socks, corporate nonsense generator, holiday cocktail bombs, or Caribou Cocoa Buddies set of two. What about an acoustic frog amplifying phone speaker? Uncommon Goods has it all. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made right in the US of A. They have the most meaningful, out-of-the-ordinary gifts anywhere. They even have gifts you can personalize. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice.
To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/theory. That's uncommongoods.com/theory for 15% off. Or just check the show notes of this podcast. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object.
Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery. Not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
So remember how Dan said, oh, no.
We're not back.
Are you back?
I think my mouse died.
Just a fucking Spooktober, dude.
What the fuck, man?
Spooktober curse. It's cursed.
No way it died.
It's amazing.
Spooky.
Going to back up, Mouse?
We're back, though, right? Are we back or never back?
No, we're not back.
Oh, we're not back.
The stream, I can't move the stream.
Yeah, okay. I didn't know if you had started the stream and then it died. I was like,
dude, what the fuck?
That's why I use a wire. That's why I wire my mouse.
I have my PC mouse.
I have the Razer mouse that has the wire and the. You can go wireless.
Both. Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah. Usually keep it wired.
Can't lose that DPI.
DPI.
Weird. Actually not dead, but it must be the Bluetooth or something. It's fucked up. That's all right. It's wired mouse. It's back. Okay, coming back in 3, 2, 1. We're back.
We're back.
All right. Let's get weird.
Let's get fucking weird.
Weirder
get,
so,
than all. As if it didn't weird. You have two mirror events. Fucking school's going downhill. Second school's going downhill.
Second school's crashing and burning with, you know, one consistent thing, Caroline. Things are going to get a little bit weirder. So remember Mary Sneed, the one sister that we haven't really talked too much about yet?
Yeah.
She was a widower, 3 sons. One of her sons, named John Sneed. All right? For whatever reason.
That's a name of someone who's up to something.
John Sneed?
Yeah.
I feel bad for this fucking guy. Sneed. I feel bad for him. So apparently, Caroline makes multiple random visits to her nephew, right? Her nephew, family man, doing his own thing, lives, you know, pretty far away too. She makes multiple attempts to this man in his home and attempts of seducing him away from his family.
Okie dokie.
And taking him back to the school for a teaching position. And when I say seduce, I mean seduce. Like, he is openly talking to people that live around them, being like, I'm not letting this woman come and home wreck my family.
And like, and that's, this is your, like, not only
your aunt.
This is your aunt, yeah.
This is your aunt. And she comes multiple times and tries to seduce John Sneed, her nephew. Turns her away. All of a sudden, randomly, he's like, okay, I'm going. Sorry. Like, wife, kids, whatever, I gotta go. Auntie's calling. It's time to go. So he hops on a train and heads towards the school with Caroline. On this trip from, you know, his home to the school, they take the train. And unfortunately for John, falls off the train.
Oh. Somehow fell off the train. Yeah.
Somehow he fell off the train, but thank God he survives.
What are you doing?
He makes it back.
How do you fall off?
Well, he's probably trying to, you know, hanging off the side, kind of like a Jack, I'm the king of the world type thing. Right? He's flying high with his aunt. He's feeling good. So they end up making it back to Virginia. He's injured, gravely injured, but they make it back. And about a week later, his other aunt, Virginia, the one that he's not in a relationship with, finds him upside down in a cistern. But guy survives. Thank God.
Like, right? like a cistern, like for like water?
Yeah. So he's half drowned in a cistern. Lives, right? This guy's like fucking got 9 lives.
At least the lamb style. Like he's
right?
He
survives, which is fantastic.
Nice, yep.
Survives long enough to get doused in kerosene and burnt to death in his bed.
Well, that happens all the time though, doesn't it?
Yeah,
well, human, especially
the,
when
the
you're
old human candle.
Yeah, kerosene right? Lamps. Yeah, like
No, but like no shit. The guy is at the school and burns to death in his own bed.
Mm-hmm. And it's not like the You know, it didn't burn the like where he was staying down. It just he burned in his bed.
Yeah.
Well, the body fat would have melted, and then that would have quelled the fire spread. I think that's how it works.
Yeah. Right?
That's not how it works.
You melt your body. It doesn't spread.
So John burns
that
to
makes
death.
Sense. Yeah.
John burns to death at the school. Right. Horrible, terrible death. Everybody's sad.
And no one suspects any foul play or like that's no. Just like this. That's just
well, suicide,
like,
right?
Is it suicide or is it just like a candle accident?
It was ruled suicide.
They ruled it suicide.
Hey, you know what? Yeah. Nothing, you know, that's a good way to go to, you know, drown yourself in a bathtub
kerosene.
And burn yourself in your bed where you could try and run away from it if you wanted.
Makes sense.
Try and drop and roll or do what you can. Nah, just lay in the bed.
So Caroline, obviously, like she's already taken one of her nephews and whatever happened to him, she brought him all the way. He obviously was feeling guilty about leaving his family, killed himself. So as a good aunt, you're going to stay away from the rest of your nephews, right?
We got wrong. Three. I mean,
there's three of them. So she goes and decides to visit another one of her nephews named Fletcher. And she makes this proposal to Fletcher and says, hey, listen, we got this big chunk of land, right? Family land. And we need somebody to take care of it, to run the land. We're thinking you're the right guy for the job. Fletcher's wife's like, you're not fucking going with your aunt. She's fucking literally lit your brother on fire. Like, you're not going with him. Like, this is not like, okay.
Your brother's kids are alone now because he had to go be with his aunt.
And he hits her with a don't tell me my business devil woman. And ends up going with his aunt under the strict stipulation that he is to call and check in regularly with her, right? So, you know, they exchange numbers. I think they're plan on staying at this halfway house or something like that. So the wife, you know, a week goes by, hasn't heard anything from him, starts calling this halfway house that they left the number for. Person answers and they're like, yeah, I mean, they were here, but they're not anymore. I mean, they might be at this place. So the wife, another week goes by, she's freaking out, calling the number. Somebody answers. It's Caroline, right? And she's like, let me talk to Fletcher right fucking now. And Caroline says, oh, he's too sick.
Fletcher can't come to the phone right now.
Yeah, he's sick, right?
What What do you mean? What do you mean he's sick?
Yeah, like what the fuck? Are you, right? So
too sick to talk.
Strange.
Too sick to talk.
Too right? Grunt on the phone.
He's like, I'm going to send him home in a week. Don't worry about it. Week goes by, no Fletcher. So the wife decides to track him down. She does her best Sherlock Holmes impression, follows the path, gets as far as she can, nothing, goes back home and just legally divorces the guy because he's gone. Boom.
He just never seen from. Was never seen from.
He wasn't gone because this is right around the time he shows up in Virginia at the school with Caroline, who then introduces Fletcher to his first cousin, Oosie.
So she gets divorced from him. He then goes with his aunt down and then is introduced to his first cousin, Oceana. Or Oce.
Oceana, yeah. Oce.
Okay, first cousin, I mean.
And when you say introduced to your first cousin, you mean in like...
Well, they get married like how many years later?
Oh, what do you think?
First cousin babies.
Yeah.
They get married twice.
Yeah.
They would have two ceremonies because apparently like when Oce and Fletcher like met and I guess they were taken with each other. They apparently like the sisters, like two of the sisters weren't really on board with this because they are first cousins and you know, whether that's the issue or something else, but they, cause I mean, cause back they didn't want to be, wasn't like,
they didn't want to be anti-cousin mothers.
Yeah.
Like, we don't want to be anti-cousin mothers. That's too much.
You know, back then, I mean, this probably wasn't as unusual, but it is still unusual. You know, so, weird.
Well, I think we would have known that, like, first cousins, there's some you're having some issues.
With That's weird. Babies. How come our baby has three eyes?
Yeah.
So Fletcher and Oce would actually marry in secret the first time, and then I guess they made some effort into getting the other sisters on board, and once they were, they had, a second, more public ceremony with
everyone. All right, I guess it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
if we can take a quick life insurance policy out on you.
Yeah. So with the you know, the college in a downward spiral and also these bizarre rumors going around of these sisters, you know, again, taking up these nightly outings near to the sunset. Well,
they're fucking their nieces and nephews and marrying cousins. I'm sure they're the talk of the town at some point.
And you've got a number of debtors and coming in and being like, you know, where's our money? Where's our money? Where's the money, Lebowski? And so
fucking money.
They decide to take to the north, farther north, and they would move to New York with Oce and Fletcher.
So my favorite part about this is like Oce and Fletcher leave. They're like, listen, we need to make our own way. We're going to New York. The school's a fucking ticking time bomb. We're out of here. So they fuck off to New York. The sisters have completely destroyed this school that, you know, their great aunt or whatever got them the jobs at. The great aunt didn't own the school. They don't own the school. But, you know, times are tough. The school is pretty much vacant. What do these fucking ladies do? They sell the school. The school they don't own.
Wait, so they have no deed. They don't have no papers. Mm. You know what? If you're confident about anything, you can do it.
Like
if you have a southern accent, dress in black.
The Islanders.
Like, gotta believe them.
Southern accent, dress in black. Nice veil.
Always bet on black. Let's fucking go.
That's fucking hilarious, actually.
It's a bold move.
You know, this is all the presage to Oce turning up dead in the bathtub. So Fletcher apparently would leave at some point during the things.
He's like fucking Alberta bound.
Yes, he was found later, but they said he left. And so just took off in the middle of the night. It's just disappeared.
Super sad too, because within weeks of him leaving, OC realized that she was pregnant. Ooh. Right? So a little extra salt in that wound. And now so Fletcher leaves.
She's like, I gotta raise this Hills Have Eyes baby by myself.
Right? Well, I don't know, the baby doesn't make it very long, but so OC's now apparently declining rapidly, mentally, physically, right? So she's requiring these routine visits from a doctor, and she builds kind of a good relationship with him, right? So, you know, he's stopping by weekly, trying to help her get healthy, put on weight because she's losing weight, and he's worried, you know, about the unborn child.
Why is she losing so much weight?
Well, because she's stressed out, you know, she's her husband just left her. Okay. Things aren't great for her, right? So she ends up having this baby, and it's, from what I understand, was a pretty rough birth. She requires a pretty significant surgery after the fact, a lot of postpartum hemorrhaging and stuff like that. The baby's also really sick, but you know, the doctor says, like, listen, this baby, he was born premature, he's small, but with a good diet and good care, he should make a full recovery.
Your honor, your doctor, is my second cousin gonna be okay?
So the doctor keeps coming back for his routine visits, ends up, you know, stitching her up, and says at this point, he's like, listen, the baby is not recovering at all. He's not making the parameters when we need. He's, you know, he's fucking not looking good on the growth chart.
Yeah.
Right. So the sisters decide to take the baby to St. Christopher's Hospital to recover. Okay. They come back from this hospital and say the baby died on the way, which was a fucking lie. The baby didn't die. They dropped the baby off at St. Christopher's Hospital.
This orphaned baby.
Just fucking brutal. Then it gets even worse for Usi, because the doctor comes to show up and is like, hey, like, I got to remove these stitches, right? We don't want to get septic. We don't want to get sick. Also, like, she looked really bad last time I saw her. She looked emaciated. The sisters at this point are like, you're not seeing her. You're done. She's no longer your patient. Beat it. The guy starts getting super concerned. He's like, listen, like, I've got a nurse. Let the nurse look at her. Help her out. They turn away the nurse. They turn away everybody. The doctor gets so stressed out that he's like, goes to the police. He goes to the Brooklyn 99 and is like, listen, guys, like, so they're abusing this woman. Like, she needs help. The police come to show up at the house to, you know, see if he can substantiate these claims. The house is vacant. Right? Which leads us to where Dan brought us with them finding
Usi. Like, and it's like in a number of doctors, like, they eventually, like, would come forward, like, during the trial. After they snatched up, like, the police snatched up the three sisters, they start following all of these leads, trying to figure out exactly what happened, because it's like one of those cases where you start turning over, like, one stone, and it starts, there's all of this stuff. So they're sending out, you know, they're sending out detectives to several cities, both north and south, trying to track down all of the leads that are in this case. And they're also kind of looking at different angles of the case, and one of those would eventually be the insurance on the life of O.C. Sneed.
Well, and, like, the reason why they got there is, like Dan was talking about earlier, like, you have this big abandoned house. You got this poor dead lady in a pool or in the bath, where this family, this, like, Virginia claims to be living in this house with her niece, right? And it's like, this is not a very big house. There's one bathroom. She's been dead for 24 hours. You mean to tell me that nobody's had to use the bathroom in 24 hours? Are you pissing in jars here? Like, how are you?
Pete in the sink.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, you've been caring for this sickly niece, and you haven't checked on her in 24 hours?
No.
Like, you didn't give her any food? You didn't bring her, you know, she obviously can't. She was, you know, from what you're telling me, she was too weak to get out of bed. So were you guys feeding her?
Some obvious detective work was needed here, because it wasn't adding up.
Well, and so they did. They're, like Dan's saying, they're following all these fucking leads. And one of these leads, they end up finding this a cab that they hired that was taking the sisters from this fucking Roach Motel that they had Usi at to fucking these extravagant hotels and fucking places where they're going for dinner and fucking living. So they're living in these expensive hotels while their niece and daughter, Caroline's daughter, is rotting away.
So with the money that they've siphoned off from the two schools that they bled dry, they're living in luxury while they are keeping their niece in prison, pretty much.
It was really. It was like they gave off this appearance, like, the places that they were living or where they found OC, like these places that the police were following them to were, like, empty places. Like, these places hadn't been lived in very long, or that seemed to be kind of shuffling around where they were keeping OC. But yeah, like Andrew said, like, the other sisters were attending these places. They were meeting with, like, high society, like, socialites and stuff, like, in these large,
the presidents of school, right? Like, they're high positions.
But they're well-spoken. They know how to interact with people. They can sell
and
it,
even,
right?
Even the doctors who, like, it wasn't just, like, one. There was, like, two or three that were attending, ended up, like, attending OC, like, while she was, you know, ending up being malnourished and during her pregnancy and this like that. And they were saying that these women that were caring for her said, were saying like, you know, we'll pay you, like, here's some money. Like, they were giving them cash, and they were basically like giving them cash almost like more
money and fuck off.
Yeah. But like a lot of money. Like, they would be like, they'd reach into like, there's one anecdote apparently about like Virginia, like reaching into like a trash can that seemed to be just like full of ashes, and she pulled out just like a wad of cash, like $1,000, and she's like, here,
take it,
you know, get out, you never were here, she's not your patient anymore, get out,
beat it,
you know. And it's like, what the fuck.
My favorite part about this too is like, before we get into the insurance fraud, so Usi and Fletcher actually had a home of their own, right, when they first moved to New York, when the auntie cousin mothers showed up knocking on the door. So in the investigation, they end up finding this place. And I guess the neighbors have called this place the House of Mystery, because it's your like prototypical haunted mansion. All the windows are blacked out. The front yard, everything's all fucking grown
overgrown.
Over. They get in there and there's like blood splatter everywhere on the ground, and it's all disheveled and shitty looking. And for whatever reason, they end up popping open the oven. Oh. And all they find in there is just this wad of blonde hair, this tiny femur bone, and what looks to be like an orbital bone from a small child.
Jesus.
Ugh. And then they say, like the neighbors say, like they hear banging and loud noises all day and all night, and people coming and going from this place. And they're like, this place is fucking spooky as hell.
Little occulty.
Dude, that like still like no break for the people in the neighborhood. Like they're hearing this all the time. Like still. Like at this time when the police are there.
Oh, I don't know. But that's the house just had that reputation.
Had that history.
Yeah.
So one of the leads that the police start to track down is the paper trail on the life insurance on the life of O.C. Sneed. So they check like Equitable at the time, which apparently revealed that there were three such policies taken out on O.C. Sneed. And then also, in addition, while at New York Life Insurance Company and Metropolitan Life together, also had records of another four policies taken out on her, with a total value of all seven of those coming up to $24,000.
Isn't there a limit of how many life insurance you, from one person can take out on one person? I guess back then it was a little harder to track down who's insuring what, so...
And this was $24,000 like in 1900.
Dude, I got life insurance policies on all you fuckers, just in case, in my name.
Smart investment.
Just in case.
I think...
Especially Braden. I doubled up on him, but it turns out it might not be happening.
Yeah, it was a bust.
Bust, yeah. I canceled it.
I think... I looked it up and it was like the $24,000 in like 1909 money is like almost $1,000,000.
$24,000.
I'm doing it right now. Yeah. It's like 800, almost 830,000.
Yeah.
Basically.
Not a ton of money, but it's a pretty good chunk of change. Life changing.
So apparently like these policies have been taken out over a period of years, like starting in 1900 when OC was only about 15, and like some of them, I think they said that most of the policies were in 20 year endowments. Some were 30 year plans. And then they had originally had been payable annually, but later most of the premiums were made payable quarterly. And this indicated that there was some type of financial strain going on, that because they also saw that loans had been taken out on every one of those policies to the limit of their borrowing power, apparently.
They're using all the life insurance as collateral for all the loans.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy because this is what we have that's documented, right? Like we have proof of that. But then when you look into these ladies' histories, right? Like you've got Mary, widower with three kids. Right, you look at fucking Caroline, husband who dies, kid who dies, and then
lover dies.
Obviously, OC and right, and it's like to these women, their whole like other than the three of them, everyone else is expendable to them. It's like they've created these families. Them. Well, no, it's like they've created like this whatever they've their little families they're using as like they're using them as
to
opportunity
fund their to get lifestyle. Fucking rich.
Yeah, like yeah. Everybody else, no one matters but them. Right,
it's so weird. It doesn't matter. Your kids,
the
your
coven
cousins,
fucking shit, man.
Yeah.
I think these ladies think they're witches. I'm not saying that like witches are real, but I think they think they're witches.
It's witchy vibes, dark witchy 100%. Vibes.
So they had taken out money against these life insurance and policies, like to the point where I believe like even one of the doctors was trying to tend to OC, like almost the doctors seemed to be like they were trying to get her taken care of, but
it pretty much came to light that they were slowly starving her to death.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they were poisoning her. They were giving her they were morphine. Slowly killing her with morphine.
Yeah, morphine over an extended period of time.
Yeah. Hence why she was able to drown in such a small amount of water. Like you can't, nobody's going to drown themselves by suicide in a bathtub. Mm. You can't.
Your body would if in that little of water, your body would naturally fight to get up. Like you would, I think it's impossible.
You'd have to be sedated.
Yeah. Or held down. Or held down.
Or hit your head. And,
or just have
be unconscious.
Exactly. Unreal willpower.
But they were even one of the other stories they said was like one of the doctors was trying to push them to take care of her, and they're like, look, you'll get paid if all you care, thinking he just cared about his money, just wanted to pay him and get away. They're like, look, they showed him the life insurance policy or one of the life insurance policies and showed him that and said like she's not going to be around for long, like this is the money that we have on her, so you'll get paid. And the doctor's like, it's not about that. Like he was trying to tell him, like, it's not about that at all. There is one doctor.
So they're just offering that up to their bar tab. They're like, hey, listen to your tab. They're like, look at this. Look at this policy.
Exactly, is what they're doing. Like,
isn't she younger than you? You're like, don't worry about that.
The detectives found that the insurance policies on the life of O.C. Sneed had been deposited as security for loans in some cases. Some were actually registered with issuing companies. Some were not. They said the entire network was actually immensely complex and ingenious. They had multiple copies of these copies of these policies, and some would go missing. Then they would get other copies reissued, and it was just it was nuts.
Crazy.
I feel like they had it really, like they were doing pretty good, and then they got lazy. I think they kind of
all criminals get lazy eventually. That's what happens.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Well, I think they thought they were too smart. They could get away with it. They're like, literally, listen, we literally burnt that motherfucker in his own bed. We got away with that. We can do anything.
Yeah. Yeah, no one will catch us.
They just went wrong in the sense that they didn't furnish the house and make it look livable.
Yeah, you guys mentioned did they just give life insurance to anybody or whatever? I think there was one one of the issuing banks or something, like one of the managers came and when they asked him why did you give her a life insurance policy, obviously
family.
Why'd you give them a loan? You give them a loan? Why did you give them a loan as the insurance policy as collateral, whatever? And they're like, well, no, she came across as, she was dressed all in this austere black, and she's looking like this, and she came in with very professional, and she had a very high, the Southern accent caught them all to be like, oh, she's well educated and cultured woman, and she all struck us as very competent and whatever. We just thought they were a rich family that kind of fell on hard times, which was not unusual, we felt bad for them.
all three had life insurance on the same person who's young.
You tell me she's a witch, forget about it, huh? She's got an accent.
Well, so the one thing I wasn't clear on did the three sisters, were they extend the loans they took out on the policy? Did the amount that they were basically defrauding people, did that equal way more than what the life insurance would have paid out? That was kind of my question, is did they borrow more than they could even cash out?
No, I mean, you can borrow as collateral more than you'd be able to borrow out.
Do the banks how deep is this fraud? Did the banks talk back then? Or are they just going bank to bank and taking out huge loans?
Like different banks, the same collateral, the same insurance policy.
And then taking, that's kind of what I was curious about. And then I was trying to think of it as
in the end, there was no total, they couldn't actually total up how much this was. Like there's, it was yeah. too
And
deep.
They were going, like, I think they were going, just going bank to bank. Like the banks didn't, I don't think they talked back then. Got it. Yeah. It was kind of like you go in from bank to bank and you just, if you, you know, you fake it till you make it. Cause it was, you could just they couldn't, come across.
They couldn't pull up whatever. Your fucking credit history and be like, ooh.
Yeah, no, it didn't exist.
That's a bad score. That's yeah. a bad score.
These Sorry. Didn't exist back then.
These three sisters are what got us credit scores. Yeah,
these fuckers.
they ruined it for everyone.
Yeah, back then you could just put on your Rougarou accent and walk in there and be like, oh, like, yeah, here's $1 million. Thanks.
Promise to pay. All right. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. And you're out the door. But yeah, it's like, so like the family was actually found to be involved in a chain of insurance on the three brothers and the cousins of OC as well. Like, as we said, they all mysteriously disappeared. And coincidentally, most of them had pretty large... like large life insurance policies as well. So things kind of start to line up, and you know, with this case becomes pretty high profile, because like within a few days of them being taken into custody, it's all over the newspapers, like about what kind of starts developing. And then the newspaper investigations go and reveal that, you know, OC's mother Caroline and the aunts had apparently, you know, this is what you mentioned before, is that they had pretty much starved her to death, progressively starved her to death, and then kept her doped up on morphine in their thing. And, you know, so much that she was addicted to it. All of these things kind of start going into the trial that kind of go to. And I think Virginia is like the first one to be
sat in custody and starved herself to mm-hmm. death.
Yep, on August 11th of 1910, she died.
That's crazy.
And she was hiding food. Like they were feeding her, and they thought she was, you know, they just thought she was getting sick. But yeah, it turned out she was starving, intentionally starving.
The willpower to starve to death purposely.
Yeah. I mean, that's for her a fitting death, you know. She starved her niece.
Yeah, I hope it was fucking terrible.
I hope it was painful. And I mean, how long does it take to starve yourself to death? I mean, I guess if you're already deadly skinny and then. I guess, but it still feels like it would take like weeks or a month or more.
That was 2 weeks. That was like a little over 2 weeks, I think it was. Like
now, Brayden could stop eating for 3 months. Oh, be yeah, fine.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This would be a real slow death for me.
It's 1 pound of fat, 3,000 calories or something. So you can last for a while if you got...
Do you think she was drinking water?
Maybe not. Maybe that was part of it. Because then you go quick.
You can go a few weeks without eating food.
Well, for sure you can go a few weeks because people do it...
3 days without drinking water?
All the time.
2 days?
Yeah, 3 days. So I don't know how long you go without drinking water.
Drinking water? I bet you it's like a few days probably in your body shut.
I think it's
3 or 4.
Yeah, I thought it was 3.
Yeah.
Depending on conditions too, how hot or...
Yeah. So after her, on January 24th, 1911, the Times-Dispatch reported that they had given the verdict on Caroline Martin's case, and apparently they gave her the judge sentenced her to 7 years in state's prison for manslaughter. Ooh. And what the people found most remarkable is that like Caroline like thought it was nuts. Like she was like screaming,
"How could you do that to me?"
She's fucking climbing over. She's kicking people in the courtroom.
Yeah, she just like flew into a rage, like, and you know, and finally ended up like collapsing in court after the verdict was given. Like she seemed.
I think she was trying to play it up for an insanity fucking plea too, though, right? There was a lot of theatrics in the courtroom the entire time because her lawyer was trying to fight for insanity.
So it was that. And so
they had appeals back then too. So there was a chance that like if she acts that crazy, they can use that as evidence in the appeal. So it would kind of make sense.
Well, eventually she was, right? She was moved to an asylum.
So a few months after she was sent to prison, like they moved her to an asylum, and then she ended up, I think, dying of heart disease. She ended up dying of heart disease in New Jersey State Hospital for the Insane.
Dude, what a great name! What a great name!
Just New Jersey right State it. Hospital for the Insane.
Yeah, I love it. Like that's honestly bring back names like that. That's what I want to see. Out there.
Oh, have you ever Google what Caroline Martin looked like? She looked like fucking Barbossa from Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, really?
With a black veil on. Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Jeffrey Rush with a fucking veil.
Mm. Great. Fucking wild. So what about the third sister?
So Mary Sneed, actually, remarkably, was cleared of all charges and like moved to Colorado and was never heard from again. I think they pretty much like
got her on a technicality.
She got on a technicality, but I think most of it was like they were pretty sure like either Caroline was the head of it. They were like,
there's no doubt.
They were pretty much like Caroline. And
yeah.
I think a lot of people, like when Virginia died of, it was, you know, said that she died of starvation. A lot of people said like she died of shame. Like she's like from the shame of all of what they had done. Like she felt some kind of guilt.
Well, she did to herself. Yeah. She did to herself what she did to the.
Well, that in a way, like it makes you wonder, like, so Caroline's the ringleader. Maybe she gets these policies. She somehow like blackmails her sisters into it, and she's like, well, now you're all part of it, so you have to go along with me or I'm gonna spill it.
Yeah, but you blackmail your sister to kill her own kids?
That's true.
That's next level. Mary had to be in on it.
Maybe they thought like she wasn't gonna die. No, they're all in on it. There's no way.
They're all in.
There's
on no they're way. All shitty.
Maybe Caroline like, the worst, but they're all in.
They all gotta be.
Unless Mary's the leader.
She pulled all the strings, right? Didn't really do anything.
She pulled the Kaiser Sose, right?
Wasn't me.
Oh, she goes.
I had nothing to do with this. My name,
you know, right?
I'm on the life insurance policy.
Mary was second in, always. She was the second.
Virginia is the only one that didn't sacrifice any of her own kids.
She didn't have any. Yeah.
And she didn't have any, exactly. Yeah. Whereas Mary. And I feel like you have to be convinced to kill your own kids.
Yeah. It's just it's just crazy that it's like Mary and Virginia seemed like two competent individuals. Like when they started out at the first school in Tennessee, like everything was going really good. Like everybody was like, they were well respected in the town. Like they were doing really well at the school. The school was getting really high marks and everybody was just like pretty much happy. And then Caroline shows up and it's just like, she just takes control. It's just, there was like nothing that they could do. It almost like they said, like she had some kind of hold over them. Like it was
where that falls apart for me with her having the complete control over them, like it doesn't add up for me with how this, like how it happens in a pattern when she, like, she's not, to me, I feel like they're all in it and this is like their game plan. Like they plan this. One comes in, second comes in, they make things good. And then they bring the third one. Like, why would you continually bring the third? Like, it just doesn't add up to me. I feel like they all have to be in on it, especially that they start just taking money. Like, any one of them could have just been like, nah.
And it's also like the other weird stuff in there where it's like, yeah, they're padlocking these random doors inside of random rooms inside of these things. And, you know, these nighttime visits to cemeteries that people, you know, said were a common occurrence. And also the strange visitors at weird times of night in the evening. Like there were people mentioning like these black sedans would kind of pull up to where they were. They would meet some person would step out of the car. They would meet, they would talk for a minute, either pass some kind of parcel between them. And then the person would get back in the car and take off at high speed, you know? So it's like all these really bizarre. There's also this really weird story about one of the sister stayed somewhere for like a short amount of time. And I can't remember about this because I read it like real quick, but it was like they stayed in this one town where one of the sisters became like really obsessed with an adopted daughter of this family. Like this family who had found a baby girl left on their doorstep and they had pretty much adopted her. And the three sisters showed up at some point and kind of like stayed there with this family or were like turned out like visiting this family very frequently. And one of them was like, I want this kid. Like, I want her to be my daughter. I want her to take her to where we're going. I would, whatever. And it was like, that's what people kind of were starting to think, like, you know, some one of their daughters, and like the one who was, I can't remember which one it was, but the family's like, no, like you can't have our, this is our daughter. Like we are taking care of her now.
Especially if you're gonna fucking put it in an oven.
Like, they were like, even when the sisters left, like one of them stayed behind and was like, and one of them that wanted the daughter like kept calling and checking on the daughter. And they almost relented just to be like, leave us alone. Like they almost like gave.
Could you imagine? Yeah, okay, fucking take it. Like, fuck
just,
off.
Yeah. And it was like a really weird story. And they're just like, eventually they were just like, wait, no, like, no, you can't ever.
I just had a thought in my head because you were talking about they had all the sedans and stuff pulling up to the schools while they were working there. We obviously know they were dosing their OC with morphine, right? People were saying they're in the rooms when they wake up. Like, is there a chance that they were running a little freak parties out of the school, right?
Maybe.
Morphining, because it's all girls school. They have these johns pulled up and they dose these students, right?
I hope not. I wouldn't put it past them.
Yeah. No, like this shit they nothing. Did. It was just so weird. Why else are you going into
they're witches and stuff. They're witches, yeah, for sure. They're taking like locks of their hair and doing fucking magical weird spells.
Shit, yeah.
And that's how they were getting so many life insurance policies without getting caught. That was the magic.
Witches.
New fucking witches. Money laundering witches. Money frauding witches.
It's creepy.
Super creepy. Yeah.
I just don't understand
I wonder if those padlocks, were they hiding all the baby oil?
Yeah, what was in yeah, what were they keeping in that room?
We call it Diddy oil now.
Oh, nice. I can't that shit. That listen, anything we covered in Spooktober, that's way scarier.
Oh, yeah, the Diddy stuff scarier. And that's only just starting to come out.
Oh god. They like I don't know if any of it's real.
Diddy's gonna get killed.
Don't listen to any of the videos or anything because it is horrific.
I've not gone down that rabbit hole too far, but doesn't lead anywhere good.
No.
Oh, dude, there's been, it's so fucked up how deep that one goes now. And all the rumors that are spreading because of it. Like basically he was the Harvey Weinstein in the music. And they're like, just like Epstein, basically.
Oh, this is our black finale to Spooktober. Yeah. Spooktober is done.
Finished.
Until next year.
Honestly, next year I'm changing religions. I'm not celebrating Spooktober.
If we game it right.
It ruined it for me.
If we game it right, maybe. No, when are we going to get 666? When is? No.
600, like no, 5 years.
Okay.
Oh my God.
Everybody look forward to that one.
If it makes it to 666, I mean, that will be the end of the show, probably, if it makes it that far. That will have to be the last episode.
Yeah.
666?
Has to be.
Probably do it. Some fashion. One of us might be toast. Statistically, one of us might die by then.
Well, we're already beating the statistics on the hair loss, though. So it's
might all die by then. There, you never know.
Well, no. Yeah, I was thinking maybe we'll luck out on that one. No. We all, yeah. No more pod trips.
Yeah. All right, that was fun. All right, if you're not supporting the show, you want to support your boys, support your favorite podcast, got to go to alientheorist.com, hit that support tab. Got some beauties on Supercast this week.
Let's go.
Couple, ooh. Lee Breyer and Scott Skulllion, I think, made the switch over from Patreon. But also on Patreon, as long as you're not signing up on Apple, because that's coming up pretty quick, just sign up on the desktop version. We got Kyoto, Waled, and Thoms. Thank you very much for supporting the show.
And as we always say at the end of these things, keep those eyes on the skies.
It's simple math. Tim Hortons 2-3-4 menu fills your mornings without emptying your pockets. $2 gets you a hot coffee or a classic bagel. $3, try a sausage and cheese English muffin or two classic donuts. And for $4, enjoy an egg and cheese croissant or an iced cap. Do the math. It all adds up to delicious deals. Only at Tim's. The Tim's 2-3-4 menu is available until 2 p.m. at select Columbus, Ohio restaurants. Terms apply.
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.